What's up? This is Louis from FreestyleMania.com. I have Rocky, formerly of Spanish Fly, also known as Lorenzo. What's up, man? How you been?
Hey, what's going on, brother? How you doing?
I've been pretty good, man. I'm glad we finally hooked up and, you know, stuff like that, man. But I hear you're out and about. You're doing the MySpace thing. So what's been going on the last few years?
Oh, man, it's been pretty good. You know, things been kind of interesting. You know what I'm saying? Just still getting at it in the music, you know, just doing my thing in the music. I have my ups and downs and, you know, in my life, but I'm coming back again, coming back strong with some new stuff. So I just want, you know, I want to let all my people know that, especially in the freestyle world, a lot of people didn't get a chance to hear my full talent and stuff. So I want people to know that Rocky's coming back.
Wow, that's good to hear, man. So pretty much just let's, you know, kind of take us back a little bit. You know, a lot of everyone here in the freestyle world knows of Spanish Fly, obviously, with all their hits. But a lot of people don't know where Spanish Fly came from, how it started. Obviously, you were very integral and part of that. And, you know, kind of take us back to when it all started. Let's start when Rocky was a kid growing up in the city. You know, how did you get into singing? Well, who were your influences?
Okay, cool. Well, really what it was is, I had a lot of musical influences in my background, you know. Growing up, freestyle was a very big part that played in my background growing up. Like you were saying, you know, I grew up in the city, not as big as Miami or New York and stuff, but we come from San Jose, California, which is to me is an emulation of New York City anyway. But on that note, we got a lot of freestyle music that came out from there pretty quick. So we were talking about growing up in the music. My pops was a Latin percussionist and vocalist for a Latino group, a band in the 70s and early 80s and stuff. And, you know, that time I was a teenager. But I can remember one point my dad, I think it was 6 years old, my pops, called me into his gigging room because he always used to gig every night in his garage and stuff. And I just, you know, I never hardly ever got to see my dad. But when I did, he was, you know, pretty much doing his music thing. So one night, you know, he was in there and I had never even stepped on a mic or nothing. And my pops just, you know, put me on the mic and he was like, mijo, you know what, come here. And I was like, what's up? And he's like, just get up on the mic. I want you to sing something. And I didn't even know, you know, what to sing. And he just like, just sing about anything. And he was like, and I was like, what? I remember so vividly because I remember he said, just sing about the birds and the bees.
There you go.
So it was funny, though, but I started singing just, you know, off the top of my dome. And that's how I got to understand the whole rhythm and element of freestyle just right there and then.
All right. So when you grow, so you know, when you were getting all these influences from your father and getting into all into singing, was it more like you're doing your teenage years that you said you started listening to what was really playing in the clubs, like freestyle music and whatnot?
Yeah, most definitely. I remember listening to like people like Lisa and the Cold Jam, you know, people like Sweet Sensation and people right. The music was just so fresh and young that Latin dance beat was just so raw. It's just so urban, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I hear you.
And so I remember what happened was aside from I can go in depth and deep about, you know, the artists that I pretty much grew up with, but we're talking like people like African Bambaataa, people right. like Soul Sonic Force, all the people that the beats, you know, that East Coast urban feel, that beat, you know, it was just like in my blood. It's just something about it, because you know I kind of grew up in the ghetto, you know, I grew up in the hood, you know what I'm saying? So I knew right off the bat what my soul was just drawn to, and so that's kind of where that went. But then when I came to the club situation during my teenage years, you know, I was out there, I was doing my thing, and I was kind of like, you know, young and dumb and kind of lost a little bit, but you know, I still had my talent and my gifts. And you know, one night I went to a club, and out here we had a club called Studio 47, and that's where they played all the young Latin hot freestyle mix, all the beats
right,
and everything.
Right.
And I remember going to a night where they were Days of Upstairs Records. They played there, and I saw them, and I wasn't too impressed. And You want me to go on?
No, you keep on going, man. Keep on going.
Yeah, so I wasn't impressed, and so I remember just listening to them. I mean, I loved the song because I heard it on the radio and everything, but I wasn't impressed. I was like, man, I like their song, but their performance was just, to me, was not cool. It was just not, you know, up to par. So I was like, that kind of just gave me this, like, this boost. I knew what I could bring to the whole music thing, you know what I'm saying? So one day I pursued who was on that label, because that label sounded that sound kind of sounded a little bit Western. It was freestyle, but it wasn't like, it had more of a commercial edge to it. You know what I'm saying? So to me, I was like, that just sounds local. It sounds kind of local. So I just pursued it, and I found out that record label was in my hometown, and it was Upstairs Records. And so I went and talked to, CEO of the company, which his name was John Lopez at the time, and then I just, you know, I just I showed him, I showcased my talent right there on the spot, and showed him, look at, I can sing, you know, I can bust, and I actually did some freestyle for him on the spot, and they liked it, and then I came back the next week and showed him some music that I had put out, and he liked it, and then you know, next thing, one thing led to another, we went into the studio,
right,
and we did Precious.
Wow, man, that sounds like just like a ride and a half, man. So pretty much, you know, that you got your chance with Upstairs Records, you know, and you did your thing with them. But how did Spanish Fly occur? Was that something you already brought to the table, or that was something that the label kind of created for you?
Okay, actually, that's a good question you asked me, and I'm really glad you asked, because I kind of want to. This is where my life and this whole story gets interesting. It's pretty dynamic from this point, because to be honest with you, and this is, I'm gonna let everybody know out there the real deal, because during the time in that era and that generation, freestyle was underground music. It was pretty, you know, independent market, and a lot of the record labels were doing shady things with their artists, man, and that's kind of what happened to me, you know. Pretty much what happened to me is that I was supposed to bust out as a solo artist. I was supposed to bust out as Lorenzo with Precious. That was the original thing.
Okay.
And what ended up happening was, you know, I was only 20 years old. Come on, you know what I'm saying? I mean, mind you. So what ended up happening from that point was that, you know, my label decided that they were going to just start taking advantage of my youth, man. You know, my inexperience in the streets and the whole music thing, you know, because independence didn't have that whole, you know, that whole legitimate form to run orderly under, you know, that just that whole, you know, that legalistic type of deal with majors, you know what I'm saying? This is an independent record label. So they did their own thing, you know, and if it meant streetwise, that's what they were going to do. And so I was just another young artist coming into a young record label, independent label. And that's what happened to me, man. They just said, you know what, you want to do a solo thing, but we're going to look at it from a whole nother standpoint. We want to put you out as a group. Because see, for one thing, if you ever listen to Fresh, when you play Precious, the background vocals are Galley's vocals, as an artist, a freestyle artist at the time named Galley. Okay, he also produced too, but he later changed his name to Alexander. But he's the one that did the whoa 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 and all that stuff.
Right.
He's the one that did, he's the one that did the background vocals on that track. We had him come in and do it because we just wanted to bring in another flavor to, you know, to up the song. You know what I'm saying? To bring it out. And that's what ended up happening. But Galley didn't want to get involved in the politics. He didn't want to get involved in all the antics of this whole thing that was going down with Upstairs Records, because he could already see it coming.
Exactly.
And so what happened was he just decided to back out and not go further with anything, but just get paid for what he was on, you know, which was the background. So that's what happened. And then so they decided just to do a group. Let's just do a group. And me, young, and just wanted to get my name out there. I just wanted to, you know, get my foot in the door, get my feet wet, and just get up in it, agreed to it. And so I just, they asked me, well, what kind of group do you want to do? And I said, well, it's going to have to be definitely a Latin market. It's going to definitely have to be commercial, and it's definitely going to have to stick to a new freestyle sound. You know what I'm saying? So then that's when I said, well, let's do a Spanish Fly, you know, because what happened was they brought in a dude who didn't do nothing on the record. So, you know, you want me to keep going on this?
Yeah, keep on going, man. Keep on going.
Okay, yeah. So he didn't do nothing on the record, man. And what's interesting you know, I was kind of already a red flag, you know, went up in my mind and stuff. I was like, man, they're gonna bring this guy in. He didn't do nothing on the record. He, you know, he's just, you know, a part of the look and stuff. And you know, I started kind of waking up to the whole thing of what was going down, and Milli Vanilli was starting to come into my mind, and
right,
I was like,
right.
Dude, I don't want to be known for like no fake stuff. I mean, I'm, you know, my voice is real, and I'm the lead vocalist, and that's my voice, you know. And that's me singing, but this dude didn't do nothing. If the word gets out, you know, that could be my, you know, my reputation and stuff. And so, but you know, I went with it, man. And I allowed them to, you know, go ahead and do that. But here's the deal was to me, during that time, that was just a whole exploitation type of propaganda type of move.
Wow.
Because it went sour for me in the end. And I will go more into detail if you have more questions.
Yeah, oh no, we got more. No, definitely. I mean, I see, you know, pretty much it looks like, you know, the record label from there kind of took control of everything, you know, that you wanted, that you know, that
exactly.
You guys were going through. But like with Precious, I mean, was that something that you came about with, or did you help write it, or did they?
Oh, my bad. Yeah.
Did they come out?
Back to Precious. Well, the thing about Precious was, I brought him my music. Okay. And you know, because of the control issue, they just wanted to, you know, that was the whole style in those days was, for record labels, it was all about control, man. And, you know, if you did your own music, but you were good and you had potential and you were a signed artist, they didn't want you at that time to do your music or produce your own music. And so that's pretty much what happened with me. They were like trying to keep control of that. So they just said, no, let's do our music. Let's do our thing. So they just showed me some tracks. And I was like, you know, running through tracks. They showed me like, you know, they let me listen to a library of tracks and stuff. And I was like, okay, cool. No, not this one. You know, oh, I like that one, but nah, it's all right. But nah, but then when it came to Press, you know, the track of Precious, just the music, I was like, that's dope. I like that right there. And you know anyway, so that's what happened. So I like Precious, and we were excited about it, cause that's the one I wanted to do. And they were like, okay, well, here's the deal. On this track right here, cause Days was a signed group on the label as well.
Right. I remember
and
them.
Yeah, they had already done Girl, and Girl was pretty, you know, it was a pretty dope jam, you know what I mean? I love that song, man.
Right.
And so I, you know, got a big following, and so I was already, like, excited that, you know, I was going to do something that somebody had already kind of, like, touched, and it was already, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was just going to bring my own flavor to it, so that's what happened. They showed me a couple of lyrics is what happened to that track, and I was like, yeah, but they even tried to sing it to me, but what happened was Bobby Bahinas of Days, which is the writer, not the full writer of Precious, but he was, like, the co-writer of Precious, he's the one that was, like, he wasn't even around, he was, like, in L.A., and at that time I was in San Jose, So, you know, we didn't even make contact. We had no contact. I didn't even know how the melody of Precious went, how he wanted it, nothing. I just did my own thing with it, basically.
Right.
So they showed me a few things, and there was just a few lines, and it was just Precious, whatever, right? And I was like, cool, I like the lines, I like the track. I'm going to just do my own thing with it. And that's exactly what happened. You know, I just, like, I started singing it, and I just started making it. And then when it came, because what was written was basically just two lines of Precious on the hook, on the chorus, and then it was like I think the first half of the first verse was written, and then so I had to finish the first verse, and I had to write the whole second verse, and then pretty much complete the chorus and the hook, you know, of the song. So that's how that came about, and I did it, and it came out dope, and everybody was happy. The record, the label was pretty you know, perspective about it. Everybody was really excited and positive.
Right.
And so we went and we recorded it, and that's how that came down.
Wow. So pretty much, you know, Precious drops. I'm sure all of the West Coast is going crazy over it, you know, and you're doing shows, you're doing this, you know. I mean, kind of, you know, share us some experiences with that. I mean,
I'm excited to tell you. So what happened was once the song was completed in the studio, the mixdown was done, everybody was happy. I waited about 2 weeks very impatiently. For the return, you know, the boxes to come in from UPS, you know, from the distribution and everything. And I was just like really excited, man. They finally came in. I had my signing, my, my, my signing party the next, like, I think it was the next week. But when they came in, man, it was crazy because I remember I was at work and I was sitting down and I got a call and they came in and I rushed down to Upstairs Records and it came in boxes and I seen it, how it looked, you know, the graphics were cool, everything was tight, and I was like, dang. And it even had addresses of all the distribution where it was going, you know, it was going to New York, Miami, it was going everywhere. So I was pretty excited at that point. And then I started, I grabbed, you know, a box, you know, John gave me a box, you know, it was cool because he gave me a box. And that box I just distributed to my family, I gave it to my family, my friends, people that, you know, and everybody was going crazy, man. It was so crazy, but it really didn't hit me until I was at work one day. It was about 6 o'clock in the evening. I was coming home from work. It was already getting dark, and I remember I was riding my jalopy because I had like this old school ride. I don't remember what it was. It was like an old, right. You know, Oldsmobile Cutlass or something. It was just a crazy car.
You did it old
car.
School then.
Yeah, school. And then I was driving, and our radio station is Hot 97.7 at that time. You know, was pretty much the local station that everybody listened to for the, you know, the pop R&B and freestyle tip. And so all of a sudden I was driving, I had my radio on, and all of a sudden my song comes on, and I'm at a stoplight, and, you know, ready to turn into the intersection. And I just, you don't understand, man, it was like in the movies, like I heard the song and I was on the radio, and I just, like, I screamed. I was just going crazy. I was like, this is me, you know. And I was like, I got out of my car. I kind of, like, you know, did like a little groove and stuff. And I was just like excited. Everybody's kind of tripping on me, but, you know, it was just crazy. Cause then I got in my car and I started rolling to my jam. And that was the first time I heard my song on the radio. And it was just crazy. It was just outrageous, man.
Man, I bet the same thing happened when you did your shows, huh?
Oh, man. And then from that point, it was crazy because, I mean, we're talking like, right from overnight, man, overnight, you know, local success, you know, and then it went international. But I remember doing shows from that point. It was like my shows were just sold out. I mean, everywhere we did show, there was not a show that was not, you know, capacity under 1,000 people. I mean, that's just how crazy it was during that time. And I mean, that's minimal because the deal is that we packed out the stadiums here. We packed out, you know, pretty much the car shows here. And, you know, we did shows with big artists, you know, with Coro, you know. I did shows with Debbie Deb and people like just back in the days, man, that were doing things. Timmy T. I mean, it was just crazy, man. The people that I knew, the people that I met, you know. The shows were just outrageous, man. Let me tell you, the shows were crazy.
So you pretty much got, you have a freestyle friends all over, I'm assuming, throughout your, you know, your shows you've done. I mean, so you've kind of become, are you still friends with some of them? You still talk to them?
Oh, most definitely. No. You know, the thing is that time passes, Louie, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And people kind of, you know, go different directions and stuff, and people lose contact and stuff. But with me, what happened was during, you know, I'll get into my story, but I don't keep too much contact with people, but I did, you know, develop some relationships along the way. Yes. So there are many artists that do know about me. They just don't know that I'm back up in the game. You know
what
I'm saying?
Yeah, I hear you, man. So were there any people you dated or anything like that back in the day or no?
Well, it's kind of crazy because, you know, I don't really want to get too deep into this because, you know, I don't want to disrespect people. But, yeah, you know, I mean, I have my time. I mean, I could say that, you know, that there was a freestyle icon. And I'm sure everybody knows who Lil Susie was and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, we kind of talked and stuff, and we you know, we had some time, out there, and it was just one of those things, you know, in the music time, you know what I mean?
Right. No, I hear you, man.
Go ahead.
So pretty much, it sounds like during the while of Precious and getting, you know, you were on your label and you were doing this thing, for a moment there, it seemed like things were kind of moving your way. But at the same time, you know, obviously, I think a lot of the freestyle world doesn't know that, you know, that you know weren't part of the second movement of Spanish Fly, if you will, where the album was called Anything You Want with the guy Milo and the other guy. So obviously something had to have happened, and there were always rumors out there that something happened. What happened to where after this positive thing of Precious happening and you know, you going, you know, touring around, meeting these people, what kind of tension started happening that these rumors have surfaced up? I mean, what's true and what's not? And I guess that's what kind of boils down to this interview. You know, what really happened at the very end?
OK, Okay, well, that's a very good and interesting question. I'm sure that was going to lead to this anyways, because, you know, like I said, going back to the things about upstairs, yeah, man, you know, like I said, I mean, majors and independents, they're two different worlds, you know, and that's why I kind of, after a certain era, I don't know if you remember, like in the rap started, you know, bringing up the independent side started getting stronger, and they started just, you know, doing the independent, started really coming, making a comeback, because, you know, from a standpoint of where I came from, you know, you didn't have very many major labels, because I wasn't, you know, I wasn't in L.A. I wasn't in Los Angeles where Capitol Records was, and you know, like I said, I mean, I'm in a big city, but with one major independent label, and that was Upstairs Records. Right. And so, like I said, what went sour was, man, I had my fame and my. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I didn't say anything.
Yeah. So my bad. It's probably the phone, but not because. You know, like I said, everything was going good. I was doing shows, you know, I mean, meeting a lot of different stars, you know, being, you know, having just living that whole star rock star life, you know, as they put it, you know, I was living that whole life, man. And but what ended up happening was, this is kind of crazy, because here's the real deal. I was not what people thought I was, you know, at the time. In other words, you know, my talent is what it was, but my status quo, as far as like me owning cars and me having money and me, you know, just high rolling and you know, that whole genre thing, right. That was not me, man. I mean, I made it look like that, but see, at the time it was like I was suffering because my label wasn't taking care of me, man. When I got signed, you know, it was not something that. Hello.
Yeah, I'm right here, man.
Yeah, okay. When I got signed, it was not something that, you know, I had a second guess. I thought, you know, that was a whole part of the whole thing, you know what I mean? So to me, I just went with it, but what ended up happening was I had no place pretty much to stay, and it was kind of crazy because, you know, here was a star. I mean, here was an up-and-coming, a rising star that had a hit song on the radio, but here I was at Upstairs Records, nowhere to go back to lay my head, and no job, but you know, still just, you know, right in the wing with this song and my fame, but you know, with no money in my pocket, you know, right. What I'm saying, no money in my pocket at all, but I would be, you know, walking down the street strutting like John Travolta and staying down the